Harry Belafonte describing his disinvitation from giving a eulogy at the funeral of Coretta Scott King. If you'd like to get a copy of today's broadcast, you can go to our website at democracynow.org for transcript, video, and audio podcasts. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdelkaddous, John Hamilton, Anna Nagara, Elizabeth Press, Yoruba Richin, Maddie Harper, Aaron Mate, Mike DeFilippo, and Nick Marsilier, our engineers. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Amy. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. Time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, coming to you live from the studios of the State University of New York at Stony Brook at WUSB. You know, It's something how an event can sort of just change your mood for the entire day. You know, one thing happens, you stub your toe or you walk into a plate glass window or something, and it just sort of, you know, it just sets the tone. And on my way over here, it's always a hassle one way or another, whether it's hitting a big pothole or dealing with some idiot on the road with a huge two-story SUV or something like that. But don't you hate it when you're in a line of something like 23 cars waiting for the left turn arrow, and you're the only one who doesn't make it? You know, the thing is very liberal little green arrow there, letting everybody through, which is sort of the point. In this society of ours, where we can't be trusted to make a left turn on our own, we have to have the arrow. I don't know if people in the rest of the world understand this. In the United States, if you don't have a left arrow, you can't make a left turn. Now, it used to be that if you had a green light, you could make the left turn when you damn well felt like it, or when it was safe, and we were kind of, you know, trusted to do that. But now, our mental facilities have declined to such a state that we need the arrow to tell us, yes, you can go, no, you may not go. Even if nobody is coming for 100 miles, no, you can't, there's a red arrow, you can't make the left. And that's sort of where society has been going for the last 10 or 20 years. Every single possible move you can make has to be regulated in some way, because we're just not intelligent enough to figure it out ourselves. And you know what? There are some people who aren't intelligent enough to figure it out for themselves. There are some real idiots out there, some real screwballs. They'd drive into a brick wall if it appeared in front of them and they had a green light. Hey, the light was green. Wall shouldn't have been there. You know, idiots like that are defining our culture. And we have to live with it. And the thing is, when they take away the rules just for an instant, we fall apart. We've become dependent on the rules. And we've seen this in so many different ways. The traffic light is one instance. If you turn a traffic light into a flashing light, God forbid, because something happened to it and it's broken, everybody's just going to careen all over the place, overturn, drive onto the shoulder, you name it, because we don't know what to do. We panic. It's the same mentality that takes over when the first snow of the year hits. Oh my God, there's going to be an inch of snow tomorrow. Get to the Price Club and stock up, because we may never get to a store again. And make sure you drive like a maniac, too, and honk your horn. And run over everybody in your path. Because that's what's been programmed into us. And there are so many instances of this. We see it after 9/11. Of course, we're told that you have to have identification to get into buildings. You have to have identification to get onto an airplane. And, you know, no one has ever thought of the fact that, you know, fake ID is a pretty easy thing to accomplish. It doesn't really get you any more safety. It simply gets you on more lists. But the people who don't want to be on the lists, they know how to stay off them. So you're not really getting anything. You're getting a false sense of security. But when you take it away, when for some reason the guy isn't at the door of the office building taking your name, you react and you say, oh my God, this building isn't secure. There's no guy taking my name. Or they accepted an expired driver's license when I got on the airplane. Oh my God. Have we learned nothing from 9/11? You know, we've fallen into the thought process so easily. It almost wasn't a challenge at all. So, yeah, you know, while I'm against the left turn arrows, I know that if they take them away, there'll be carnage on the highway. Death, destruction, mayhem. Oh, my God. But, you know, it might even be worth it. Just to gain a little bit of liberty back. Slowly, mile by mile, the dotted yellow lines are being replaced with solid yellow lines so that you don't ever have to pass anybody because you're not allowed to. Because what if you don't get back into your lane in time and you smash head-on into oncoming traffic? It could happen. And if the dotted line is there, that's exactly what you're going to do. Meanwhile, Americans who travel to places like Poland die of heart attacks when they get on a bus and see how they drive. It's incredible. I described this before, but when they pass cars on highways, even before all these new ridiculous rules, regulations, and fear came into being, we would know to get into our lane well before anybody even came close to us in the oncoming traffic lane. But over there, they get back just in the nick of time. They just sort of pass right by the oncoming truck or bus. It's sort of like ballet almost. They just gracefully maneuver their way, so it's within inches. And of course, you know, we're all biting our teeth. No, that's not right. Biting our nails. Most of us aren't used to this. And wondering, my God, how do these people get through a day? And they're probably wondering the same thing about us, because we're so afraid of everything. And we assume that they're just living recklessly. Well, you know, maybe they're just more awake and using common sense. Which is something I think we're gradually losing touch with. Oh, and speaking of carnage on the highway, the LIE made the news. Did you see this? I was watching BBC. I don't mean to rub it in to all you people who can't get it, but yes, I do get it through my Canadian dish. I'm surprised nobody yet has been able to get BBC World in this country now that it's available. but no cable company, no satellite company will sign up for it. I consider that censorship. How is that any different than the Politburo saying, no, you shall not see this? Okay, the corporate powers that be are keeping alternative news out of your home. You know, it's okay, our country is ruled by companies, not governments. So, big deal. What's the difference? You guys need to get off your asses and get these people to answer to your demands, because you're the ones ultimately in charge. But enough soapbox rabble-rousing for now. On the BBC, I happen to see this horrific accident that took place right here on Long Island. It's something to be proud of. You know, we've had things like Amy Fisher, we've had the garbage barge, we've had almost a nuclear catastrophe at Shoreham, with all sorts of things on this island to be proud of. But this was something that I thought was really incredible, because not only did it show some horrific driving, which amazed the entire world, but it also showed how high technology is able to capture these magical moments. And so this tour bus was in the HOV lane. I don't, what's a tour bus doing in the HOV lane? Does that really qualify as an H? I guess it is. High occupancy vehicle. But it's a big vehicle, too. It's a big vehicle. So I thought the HOV lane was for cars with lots of people. If you stick all these buses on them, it's you can't even see past the buses. What's the point? Well, anyway, the tour bus was behind this car that got completely squished by this out-of-control 18-wheeler. Came veering across into the HOV lane and just went right over this poor car. And the guy survived. The guy survived. It was amazing. You saw the car. How could anybody survive this? But the whole thing was captured because buses now apparently have cameras that not only film the people inside, but film the road ahead of them. So that means we're going to see more and more of such things. Everything that happens on the road is going to be filmed one way or another. You see it on TV. You see the police, they always film the perps as they're pulling them over. And you see how they attack the cops and beat them up and do all sorts of horrible things. You never see when the cops do something bad, because for some reason the tape never seems to survive after that happens. It's true. I've heard it from cops themselves. Yeah, we didn't like what happened that day, so we put a magnet in the trunk where the VCR was. They do this. And you probably would, too, if you were a cop. It goes with the territory. But anyway, more and more things are going to be captured on video and shown to you in all sorts of gruesome detail. Now, this one happened to have a happy ending. Well, I guess not too happy. The guy's he's probably sitting right here at Stony Brook. Yeah, probably at our university hospital. Because that's where you go when you get really messed up. And this guy had an 18-wheeler fall on top of him or his car. And somehow he survived. It's a testament to how cars have developed over the years. That something like that could happen and someone could, not walk away from it, but certainly survive and have some hope for a normal life afterwards. And some great pictures to show the future generations. Thanks to the bus. But wow, world news. World news right here on Long Island. You probably saw that on local news as well, which I don't get to see a whole lot of because most of it is just so stupid. But wow, it was kind of cool. But anyway, yeah, so today I just feel like a complete loser because I was the only person in a row of 23 cars to not make that green arrow. And it's going to be really, really hard for me to get over this for the rest of the day. Yeah, this is the early part of my day, actually. This is no secret. I stay up late. I get up late. Just the way I do things. I try to do it differently, but I always fall right back into it. So for the rest of the day, I don't know. It's going to be one of those nerve-wracking experiences where I just feel like I'm the odd man out. And everybody was laughing at the intersection, too. That didn't help. That didn't. I saw the smirks. If you're one of the people driving now listening, yeah, I saw the smirks. You could have looked a different direction or something. Could have happened to you. And one day it will happen to you. God forbid it will. I think the light, though, could have sensed that there was one more car and let me through as well instead of making me have to sit there while everybody rolled past giggling, chortling. And then having to deal with the intersection here on campus, which I've talked about before, but My God, you know, you come onto campus and it's this ridiculous T-shaped intersection that doesn't have a stop sign for the part going into the T. So you have right of ways, you're coming up the hill, you get to make that left turn, but everybody coming in the other direction thinks that you have a stop sign, so they cut you off. And these are the same people, these are Long Island Railroad commuters, that have driven up earlier in the day and parked their cars, and they know there's no stop sign there. Do they think a stop sign has been manufactured since they parked their cars? I feel much better getting that off my chest, though. I really do. It's important. It's important to vent. So you have to go into that intersection with your horn already blaring. It's the smart thing to do. Okay, enough about feeling like a loser and driving challenges and things like that. How about that World Baseball Classic, huh? Yeah, I'm annoying a lot of people I know by talking about sports. But it's more than sports. First of all, I find baseball to be a fascinating game. Why? Because there are no limits of possibilities. You can have a complete blowout 16-0 game. You can have something that is a low-scoring pitcher's duel that ends 1-0. You can have something that goes for 6 hours and extra innings. Or you can have something that just speeds by really, really fast. And it's all about the individual in the game, anyway. Individual and the team. And that's what I think the Americans learned. I was very happy with the outcome because it was almost exactly what I wanted to have happen. I wanted to see Cuba succeed and embarrass the U.S. government, who wouldn't let them into the country. And I wanted to see the Japanese get revenge for the horrible call against them during the game against the United States. We talked about this last week. The incredible bad umpiring that took place, all of which seemed to be in favor of the United States. Why? Because most of the umpires, vast majority of umpires, were from the United States. Unfair, very unfair. But what happened? Japan lost the game because of that, and they were, it seemed, eliminated because of that bad call. But as it turned out, through a fluke of the tie-breaking system, when the U.S. was playing Mexico, there was a chance. There was a chance that Japan could make it through if Mexico beat the U.S., which didn't seem likely, especially when the same umpire made another bad call in favor of the U.S. There was this long fly ball hit to right field. It hit the foul pole. When it hits the foul pole, it's a home run. Everybody knows that. And he said it didn't hit it. Everybody in the stadium saw it hit, except the umpire. And he said, nope, didn't hit. It's a double. And the Mexicans were so furious with this. You could see how upset they were. Now, the interesting thing about this, and this was something probably unique in the whole history of the sport, was that the only chance Mexico had to go through was not by winning this game. They had to win this game by a score of at least 3-0, but only after 13 innings. Why such bizarre scorekeeping? Because they based it on the total amount of runs scored divided by the total number of innings played in the teams involved in the tiebreaker. And in this case, everybody would have finished with a 1-2 record, and they had to calculate it that way. And congratulations to whoever figured out that they had to do this, because it was really hard to calculate all that. But yeah, they had to win 3-0. But not until 13 innings had passed for them to actually proceed to the semifinals. So what does that mean? That means if they score a run, they eliminate themselves. Now, how is that possible? Because if they score a run, that means the United States is also going to score a run if they go into extra innings. And if the United States scores a run, they're eliminated right away. Yeah, it's crazy. It's gotten as complicated as world soccer now. So it's not so much about the sports, about the athletes, about things like that. It's about the intrigue. It's about the international scope of it. So Mexico was really upset by this call. They wanted the run, even though the run would have eliminated them. They wanted to beat the U.S. and they wanted to have Japan go through. Well, I think they wanted to have Japan go through. They definitely wanted to beat us. And they did. They did in the end. Japan actually went through, and last night Japan won the whole thing, defeating Cuba. And I got to say, you know, I was kind of rooting for Cuba because, boy, that would have been something. First of all, they were going to donate all the money to the Katrina Fund because they're not allowed to keep any money because of the stupid embargo against them. And that would have been a big black eye for the Bush administration right there, you know. Wouldn't let them in. They come in, they're triumphant, and what do you know? They give the money right back to the U.S. How do you like that? But seeing Japan just bounce back after that horrible, heartbreaking loss that was stolen from them, I think that sort of was a better outcome. But it was so cool seeing all the major league players get eliminated because they weren't playing as a team. All they cared about was their individual multimillionaire status. And as we talked about last week, people like George Steinbrenner just not even supporting the international competition, preferring that his millionaires stay in spring training and entertain the people at home and do nothing else, not risk getting injured by representing your country. Well, guess what? That kind of attitude made the U.S. lose. And the U.S. can no longer say they're at the top of the baseball world. They're not. Cuba is ahead of them. Korea is ahead of them. My God, what a great team they had. They were undefeated until that final game with Japan. No errors at all in the entire tournament. The only team to do that. Dominican Republic. Way ahead of the U.S. Of course, they have a lot of major league players from the Dominican Republic. The only team, actually, in the final four that did. Japan, I think, had two. So, yeah, you know, you can say it's uncool to talk about sports in this kind of a program, but there's so much more to it than just sports. There's a whole world perspective out there, and I think the U.S. got shaken up a bit. And I know they were cheering in Havana, and they were cheering in Tokyo, which I thought was kind of cool. So congrats to everybody out there who worked hard and embarrassed the millionaires. It's all about embarrassing the millionaires. And they'll do it again in 2009, but until then, I don't want to hear anybody say the Yankees are world champions, because they're not. Japan's world champions, and Cuba's runner-up. And that's just the way it is. Okay, let's get right into religion, because I know people like that. This South Park thing is really heating up, isn't it? From what I hear, they're going to be replacing Chef now. Yeah, this is the big news. They're going to be replacing Isaac Hayes with somebody else. This has actually gotten me interested in watching South Park again. I haven't watched it in a while. Hayes and his South Park alter ego are at the center of an ongoing flap over an episode last November that poked fun at the Church of Scientology and its celebrity adherents, including actor Tom Cruise. The tenth season of South Park will launch Wednesday with a new episode entitled The Return of Chef. They're hitting the ground running with this, aren't they? Making the triumphant homecoming of lusty school cafeteria cook James Chef McElroy to the show. Hayes surprised producers last week by announcing he was leaving the series because he objected to the inappropriate ridicule of religion. Although he made no reference to the show's spoof of Scientology, it seemed rather odd because all the religions that had been made fun of over the years he had no problem with. It's going to be rather interesting. The network synopsis says the fictional town of South Park, Colorado, is jolted out of a case of the doldrums when Chef suddenly reappears, leading to new antics by the group of foul-mouthed fourth graders who are the show's stars. While Kenny, Stan, Kyle, and Cartman are thrilled to have their old friend back, they notice that something about Chef seems different. I can only imagine. It's probably going to be a tall white guy. When Chef's strange behavior starts getting him in trouble, the boys pull out all the stops to save him, the network said. Now, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? They're obviously going to have to do something that is permanent. So Chef is going to appear to be different, maybe quite obviously to our eyes, maybe not quite so obviously to the eyes of the people in South Park. And it's going to have to be revealed that it's all been an act. These last 10 years or however many years have passed in South Park, it's all been, you know, wool pulled over people's eyes. And he actually has been a woman the whole time or something like that. It's got to tie into his sexual escapades. You know, I'm open to suggestion here as to just what it is that they're going to say. But it's going to be something insulting to the original character of Chef. I can guarantee you that. And certainly insulting to Isaac Hayes, who deserves to be insulted, I think, because of trying to be more tolerant to one religion than another. And I use the term religion very lightly in the term of Scientology. Because, well, I won't even get into that, because then I'll have to spend the whole rest of the hour on it. But you know what I mean. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting. And, of course, there's a whole controversy about Tom Cruise now and pressuring Cartoon Network not to re-air the episode having to do with Scientology. All of a sudden, the plug was pulled on it in the last week. Supposed to be on last Wednesday. The episode's called Trapped in the Closet. And according to Trey Parker and Matt Stone, the creators of the cartoon, they said, so Scientology, you have won this battle, but the million-year war for Earth has just begun. I can imagine what's going on in the Scientology cave or whatever it is they hang out in. Temporarily, how do you say this? Anazinizing our episode. I'm not going to say it again. Our episode will not stop us from keeping Thedens forever trapped in your pitiful man bodies. Curses and drat. You have obstructed us for now, but your feeble bid to save humanity will fail. Hail Zenu. Yeah, okay, well, they have a nice way of phrasing it anyway. But getting on to real issues with real people, not necessarily animated. Well, I guess it is animated because we're talking about cartoons. The Swedish foreign minister, Leila Freivalds, has resigned. She resigned today, in fact, after she was accused of lying to the media about the shutting down of a far-right website that solicited cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. She said at a news conference that she could not stay in the government in the current situation. Prime Minister Göran Persson said Freivalds would be temporarily replaced by Deputy Prime Minister Bo Ringholm. Freivalds had been criticized in the media and by opposition politicians for the shutting down of the website of a far-right party that was planning to publish caricatures of Muhammad. The site was closed on February 9th after a foreign ministry official contacted the web hosting company, which critics said was an intrusion on the freedom of speech. Can't say I disagree with that. The ministry said the official had not ordered the company to shut down the site, but merely advised it that the caricatures could pose a danger to Swedes, given the Muslim anger directed at the time toward neighboring Denmark, where the original Prophet cartoons were published. She had told Swedish media she did not order the ministry official to contact the company, but a later report from the ministry said she was involved in the decision, sparking calls for her resignation. Unbelievable. Merely soliciting ideas for caricatures are enough to cause all this nonsense. Meanwhile, the Anglican Church in Wales has apologized to Muslims after a cartoon satirizing the Prophet Muhammad was printed in the Welsh language magazine. Oh, boy. The church in Wales immediately recalled all copies of the latest edition of... I'm not going to be able to pronounce this. I'm going to try. But please, you know, the people who know Welsh here, don't get on my case, because, I mean, you know, nobody else knows it, all right? Nobody else can pronounce these words. They don't have any vowels, for God's sake. E-Len. God, it sounds like Klingon. All right, whatever. It means church. That's what the word, those words, letters, whatever those things are, that's what it means. Following the reproduction of the cartoon, the drawing reprinted from the French magazine Francois. At least I can say that. Francois. I think that means evening? I don't know. Satirizes the Prophet Muhammad by depicting him sitting on a heavenly cloud with Buddha and Christian and Muslim deities. They're all together. And he is being told, don't complain, we've all been caricatured here. Oh my God! Well, he must burn down the buildings! Oh, we've been insulted! Oh, this is the end of the world! Good Lord. And, yeah, so these guys freaked out as well, and they recalled all their issues because of this. The cartoon was used to illustrate an article about the shared ancestry of Christian, Islam, and Judaism. Good Lord, do you think that's true? Most of the Muslim world considered the depiction of the Muslim prophet to be blasphemous and banned by the Islamic holy book, the Quran. Similar images in European papers sparked violent global protests around the world last month. Cian Brinnick, spokesman for the Archbishop of Wales, and that person's name is Barry Morgan. Okay, I can pronounce that. Told the Press Association on Tuesday the church in Wales is thoroughly investigating how this cartoon came to be reproduced in Ealing. That's the scandal? How it got to be put in the magazine? Not the fact that you're freaking out like this over simply printing a non-insulting caricature because some religious zealots in a far part of the world are going to be offended by it? Boy, this is a dark day. It's been a lot of dark days, actually. Despite the publication's small circulation, we are concerned about the possible... No, you're not concerned. You're afraid. You're afraid of igniting something. At least admit that. We're concerned about the possibility of causing any offense to the Muslim community in Wales, with whom the church in Wales has an excellent relationship as a result of the reproduction of this cartoon. A letter from the Archbishop has been sent to all subscribers to the magazine requesting that they return all the estimated 400 or so copies. Please, if you're out there, if you're in Wales and you have one of these, please send them to me. I want one. I want to see this. Or at least put it up on the web or something. But then your provider is going to get threats from some minister in Sweden, maybe, and who knows. Unbelievable how free speech can be thwarted so quickly, so universally. Morgan kept going. He has also apologized to the Muslim Council of Wales for any offense caused. A statement issued by the church in Wales said the bishops had already made it clear they regretted the publication of the cartoons depicting the Prophet Muhammad in various European publications and the offense that these have caused the Muslim community. He has offered the heads of the people who are responsible for even knowing anybody else who might be responsible and whatever else. Please go easy on them. Meanwhile, guess what? There are people who have a clue. There are people who are somewhat progressive in the way they think, and there's no need to castigate the entire Muslim world for the acts of a few idiots. Islamic televangelist, okay, he's a televangelist, but let's get past that. His name is another name with no vowels. AMR. How do you pronounce AMR? Well, I'm just going to pronounce his last name, Khaled, because I can pronounce that. He's young, smiling, teaches love and mercy, and is so popular he's credited with inspiring thousands of women turned off by dour traditional clerics to take on the veil. And now he's putting his popularity on the line by trying a new role as a bridge between Islam and the West at a time when many are talking about a clash of civilizations. In the process, Khaled is sometimes telling the faithful what they're not used to hearing from clerics, that Muslims aren't blameless intentions, that the West is not always bad, and that dialogue is better than confrontation. The 38-year-old Egyptian raised a storm of controversy when he attended a March 9th dialogue conference of European and Muslim leaders in Copenhagen, the capital of Denmark, which has been the focus of anger across the Islamic world over cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad first published in a Danish paper. Some in the Arab world saw his attendance as a surrender and branded him a traitor and an opportunist. This week, Khaled is headed to a gathering of Islamic clerics in Bahrain that begins on Wednesday, aimed at considering the next step in their response to the Prophet cartoons. The conference is organized by one of Khaled's most vocal critics, hardline Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi, I think is how you say that. For Khaled, the controversy underlined what he has seen as a need for a new approach by Muslims, one of reform and dialogue with the rest of the world. For the past 3 years, with youth across the Islamic world, we've been working for a faith-based renaissance in this region, which will not take place by clashes, but by coexistence. He said he expected criticism over his new campaign. An initiative by definition is something new, and I represent a school that has opposing schools of thought. So before you go around saying that everybody in the Islamic world is calling for craziness and beheadings and isn't open to the idea of freedom of speech, think about people like this who represent a significant amount in that community. And let's just keep our fingers crossed that that kind of mentality will prevail. It's not helped by kowtowing to the ultra-right-wing religious fanatics. You have to stand up to them no matter where they are, whether it's here, whether it's there, whether it's on another planet. I don't care. Stand up to them. Freedom of speech never comes second. And with that in mind, it's time for us to play our religious track, I guess is the best way to say it. And thanks, everybody, for sending in suggestions. We're looking for pieces, musical pieces, comedy pieces that deal with religion in a humorous, gently mocking way, I guess. Nothing that's meant to incite any kind of hatred or be cruel or anything like that. I think people understand the difference. So far they have. So far we've got nothing but good input. Let's listen to this one. This is from the National Lampoon.
Light your faith, and you can light the world. Set fire to the church of your choice.
Okay, wait a minute. I think that might have crossed the line a little bit, but it is the National Lampoon, you know. They know a thing or two about humor. But that's... You see, we can take that. We can take it. It's a little bit in bad taste. All right? I'm sure it'll get some people up in arms. But humor can sometimes do that. Let's do something a little bit more tasteful, maybe.
Hello?
Hello? Listen, I'm here in my dentist's office, and I'm doing something,
uh-huh.
And I'd like you to guess what it is. Now, I don't think you'll guess what it is, so I'll give you a hint. I'm breaking one of the Ten Commandments. Have to guess which one of the Ten Commandments I'm breaking.
It's hard. The third commandment.
No. You got it wrong. You'll never guess it. It was the first commandment, worshiping false gods.
Oh,
there's a pen and pencil desk set with a tinsel lamp attached in front of me on this desk, and I was worshiping it. Now, I think that qualifies a false god, wouldn't you say?
Well,
a lamp and a pen and pencil set. I even prayed to it.
You did?
I said, you were the word and you were the light. Whoops, wait a minute. The dentist is coming back. I have to go.
Okay. That was good. National Lampoon there. Please send your comments, send your suggestions on humorous religious pieces. You know, we're particularly looking for something involving Islam because no one seems to want to make fun of that at all in any way, even gently mocking. If you know of anything... Please send it on in, otw@2600.com. That's our email address. And of course, you can send any comments whatsoever. I'm sure you have lots of comments. All sorts of things we talk about. And, boy, the time just passes so quickly. What else is going on? The elections in Belarus, that was kind of interesting. Of course, I saw this coming. I was there last year in Minsk, and I could see... that there is definitely a collision course between the dictatorship, as it's called, and the people. People seem to be increasingly Western in appearance, long hair, you know, T-shirts, and playing guitar, that kind of thing. The things that are always the danger signs when you're running a dictatorship. And it was definitely different from a few years ago when I was there last, where people seemed a bit more, cautious. So with the election that took place on Sunday... there was naturally going to be a problem because this guy Lukashenko, the dictator, I think that's even on his desk, he even says, I'm the dictator of Belarus. Maybe not. But he is the last supposed dictator of Europe. And he won by 80%. Yeah, Berlusconi, I don't think, is officially a dictator. All right, well, I'll check into that. But he won 80%, which is insane. I mean, yeah, the guy is popular. The guy does have his following. But 80%. The reason why he won by 80% is because when he was first elected, he won by 75%. So people are asking, why does this guy need to commit voter fraud? Because he has to show that his support has increased, not decreased. Because even if he gets 74%, that's a sign of weakness in his eyes. So while he may have won the election anyway... this was most definitely fraud. 80% is ridiculous. When you saw number of people who gathered in the middle of a blizzard in Minsk on Sunday night to protest this, that tells you that there's a lot of opposition. Anyway, the opposition says four of its leading activists have been arrested by police in Minsk during a protest. I believe this was on Monday night. Hundreds of opposition supporters defied a heavy police presence and braved sub-zero cold overnight, camping out in the central square. Our protests will be strong and long, said one of the opposition candidates. We will never recognize this election. It's not an election, but an anti-constitutional seizure of power. And it's interesting, too, because the government was saying that these were terrorists that were gathering in the square, and that they were planning on a coup and blowing up things, ridiculous stuff like that. Things we're used to hearing here in this country when people have demonstrations. It's funny, though, to see the Bush administration criticizing this guy, who really is acting a whole lot like Bush, except with more strong-arm tactics, because the people there have more of a chance of doing something about it. Anyway, the demonstrators say they will continue their protests until new elections are held. In a television appearance on Monday, by the way, the opposition didn't really get any television time at all, which is kind of familiar, too. You don't tend to see opposition here in this country. Nothing to speak of, anyway. In a television appearance yesterday, he insisted the poll was fair and democratic and called the complaints about it absurd. Despite the unashamed foreign attempts, always got to bring the foreigners into it if you want to get what you want. It works here in this country. You bring foreigners into any kind of policy decision, and right away, you get what you want. Arabs trying to run the ports, foreign terrorists wanting to destroy freedom because they hate freedom so much, Mexicans crawling over the border. Yeah, that's what you need. You need that to pass any law you want. Works over there, too. Same basic policies. Anyway, he said, despite the unashamed foreign attempts to dictate to us and colossal external pressure, they have failed to break us. Official figures say the election had a turnout of 92.6%, and the result gives the president, in power since 1994, a third term in office. There was a two-term limit, but he managed to get that changed as well. So, interesting to see what happens next over there in Belarus. I wish them the best of luck. Of course, this revolution has to come from within. Can't have U.S. Marines landing and provoking it, because that doesn't tend to work, as I think we're seeing every single day in Iraq. And Afghanistan, too, for that matter. And because it's depressing, let's just stick with that for a moment. This is an interesting case, an interesting story, concerning what went on last year. U.S. military investigators have flown to Iraq to study reports that Marines shot dead at least 15 civilians, including 7 women and 3 children. Might not hear about this too much in the U.S. media. This comes from England, the BBC. The incident is said to have happened in Haditha on November 19th. The military's initial claim that the civilians died in a roadside blast was disproved by an earlier investigation. So, you have a massacre of civilians, and then you have a cover-up. Yeah, this is the real way to show the rest of the world what we stand for. Investigators will now ask if the civilians died in crossfire or were targeted in a vengeful killing spree prompted by the death of a Marine. A Marine dies, and they go crazy. Hey, you know what? It's understandable in human nature. You give people guns, and you turn them loose in a situation like that, they're going to act this way. No question about it. And there's no country that's immune from that, not even ours. So, yeah, that's entirely possible. Iraqis often accuse U.S. troops fighting insurgents of committing war crimes. Local residents say the Marines went on the rampage after one of their number was killed in a roadside blast and another 2 were injured. They say the soldiers began shooting passers-by and the inhabitants of nearby homes, shooting them dead. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of when Saddam Hussein had an assassination attempt against him and he went around getting people executed because he was so angry. And, what, he's on trial for that now, isn't he? Incredible. So in the report, the deaths of 15 civilians were blamed on the initial blast. Locals offered a different version of events, and the case was taken up by Time magazine. That's what you need to do. You need to get Time magazine on your side, because you won't get anywhere without them, or without some kind of major media group. Time reporter Bobby Gosch, which is probably what he said when he learned about this, told the BBC a videotape given to the magazine by an Iraqi human rights group had shown the civilians could not have been killed by a roadside bomb. Yeah, so this wasn't the military going in there and saying, hey, you know what, our soldiers are lying, or obviously something bad has happened here. No, this was a U.S. media group approaching the media and saying, hey, look, the bodies are riddled with bullets. Evidence that there was gunfire inside their homes, blood spattered inside their homes. And those findings were presented to the U.S. military in January. The preliminary investigation established that, yes, the two Iraqi families were indeed killed by the Marines, but it described the deaths as collateral damage. Human rights organizations have said that if the 15 civilians were killed deliberately, it would be the worst such case that has come to light. There have been many allegations from Iraqi civilians that similar behavior by U.S. troops has caused numerous civilian deaths in combat situations, especially during the offensives in Fallujah and elsewhere. What we need is one of those tour buses to go over there and get it all on camera, because that's really the only way. Okay, what else is going on? Right here in this country, the usual mayhem and madness. Hear about this? This is an unbelievable story. A man who neighbors say was devoted to his meticulously kept lawn was charged with murder in the shooting of a 15-year-old boy who apparently walked across his yard. Yeah. Yeah, there's more to this story, but you don't really need to read any more, because those facts are all you really need to hear to realize that, A, there's something really screwed up about this guy, and B, there's something really screwed up about our culture in general, where this kind of thing is not that surprising. How many of us know? How many of us know somebody who is so crazed about the condition of their grass that they have threatened you with violence or with a pit bull or with a gun or God knows what if you walk on their lawn? Or something else, something equally stupid. You know, throwing trash in their garbage can on the curb or something like that. And it goes back to what I've been saying over and over and over again. If people have easy access to guns, this kind of nonsense happens. Same thing as what we're talking about in Iraq. You put people in that situation with guns, and they're going to freak out occasionally and mow down a whole bunch of civilians. It happened in Vietnam, it happened in Iraq, it's happening all over the world. And in this particular case, this guy had easy access to all sorts of weaponry, and he was a lunatic to start with about his grass, and some kid, I don't care what the kid was doing, the kid was digging holes in his lawn. Doesn't justify that. And, you know, I know there are people out there who will argue this. Oh, you're on my property. I'm going to shoot you. That's, you know, this is not cowboy era. This is not the 1800s. We're in the 21st century now. We can get over, you know, which patch of dirt belongs to who. It's gotten to the stage where there are more important things to worry about. So, yeah, this is something to consider. When you make guns easily available, I'm not talking about the government saying, no guns allowed for anybody. I'm talking about you, individual people, making this decision, thinking that you're going to protect yourself. This is more likely what's going to happen. You're going to have some kind of dispute with somebody, whether it be your wife, your kid, your dog, your neighbor, and something like this is going to happen. So, yeah, that's a little bit of American culture for you here. I think every week I'll be able to find something like this just to prove that point over and over again. Okay, what next? Oh, we have a new feature. Yes, it's a new feature of Off the Wall, entitled Building Things. And what we do is we go out onto the internet, the very dangerous, scary internet, and we find various things to do that you can do at home if you follow our instructions. But you have to follow them just right, or God knows what can happen to you. And of course, if you have instructions for interesting projects, they have to be somewhat brief because we don't have that much time. Send them to us, otw@2600.com. And this is completely done without permission, just so everybody knows that right off the bat. We'll read the URL of where we found it after. Okay, what you're going to need here, you're going to need a wooden matchstick. All right, take a wooden matchstick and slice a thin sliver from one side, and then cut the remaining stick in two lengthwise. make sure you leave a little of the red tip intact for effect. That's all you need it for. And discard one half. With me so far? Make the aircraft. That's what you're doing, you know. You're making an aircraft here. By gluing the sliver of wood, which is the wing, across the remaining part of the matchstick, which is the fuselage. If you want, you can use little scraps to make a tail section. Or you can make a biplane. Or you can use a couple of thin slices of balsa to make a huge wing, one that will carry maybe 20 engines. Indulge your aeronautical whims. Think of lift. Think of thrust. Think of innovation without the benefit of an industrial policy. Next step, catch a bunch of flies. Put them in a jar and put the jar in the freezer. I kind of get letters from people, the Prevention for Cruelty to Fly Society, I don't know. All right, put the jar in the freezer, okay? In a few seconds, the flies will be chilled out completely. This is called cryogenics, and it has its drawbacks. For example, the flies will be dead flies if you freeze them too long. Dead flies are no good. So if you're a tinkerer, refrigerate your flies. It takes longer to make them comatose, but they have a higher recovery rate than the ones you leave in the freezer next to the burritos. Meanwhile, put a tiny drop of rubber cement at each place along the wing where you want an engine. I think people are figuring out where we're going with this. Take the flies out of the freezer. Attach the abdomen of one frigid fly. Sorry, this is very difficult to get through. Attach the abdomen of one frigid fly to each drop of glue. Make sure all the flies are facing the same direction. That's very important. And now you breathe life into the flies. It's a miracle. A gentle puff of your warm breath will resuscitate the flies. Launch the aircraft. It should fly like a charm. And far from being cruel to the flies, you'll be teaching them a new and valuable thing. One that brings us to the virtue of this exercise. For we see that while flies think a lot alike, have a great deal in common, share many of the same hopes and dreams, they never act in concert as a team with regard to the worth of other neighboring flies until forced to by grim circumstance. As, for example, when they are harnessed to fly and either first experience the exhilaration of high-altitude cooperation or die. Redeemed by such a critical choice, they'll soar like a glider, race like a stealth, and when overflying a barnyard or kennel, turn into a wicked, awesome dive bomber. Oh, boy. You know, a little lesson there could have been used on the American baseball players this past couple of weeks. I'll tell you that right now. I don't know about gluing them to a fuselage or something, but definitely playing like a team. That would have been nice. Anyway, you can find this little project at www.mit.edu, right there. Comes from MIT, so that legitimizes it. /8001/people/DINORIKI/PHLIZ/work-well-together.html. And that's just one of the things that you find on the net if you look around. Incredible, huh? And again, if you have something to send us, please do so. Oh, yeah, look at this. I brought in a wrapper. This just annoyed me today. I got this new, you know, I wake up, I have what's known as a trail mix bar. And I was eating this trail mix bar. It's a company I never heard of before. And all of a sudden I realized there's M&M's in this thing. What kind of a trail mix bar has M&M's? And I look at the wrapper. I brought the wrapper in with me. It's got this kind of sophisticated-looking font. You know, it's all in italics. It feels healthy just looking at it. I expect to be having nuts and berries and healthy things. What's an M&M doing in this? And sure enough, it says right there, with almonds, peanuts, raisins, mini M&Ms. It's right there. It's hidden as if it's like some sort of natural ingredient, a mini M&M with a little trademark symbol next to it. And I may be in my 40s, but still, when something is an M&M, that's sort of like the highlight of whatever it is I'm eating. And it stands out. And it just kind of shocked me. This is not, it's true, morning was 3 o'clock in the afternoon for me, but still, I think it's wrong. It may be my conservative leanings here, but I think it's wrong to be having M&Ms for breakfast. Why is it called trail mix, anyway? Because, it's something you find when you're walking on a trail? Is that how it works? Actually, hang on, this is something that Wikipedia is useful for, because... Actually, Wikipedia is useful for many, many things. Almost everything in the world you can find out about through Wikipedia. Okay, trail mix. Do we have a net connection? Okay, what's this? Gorp? Gorp, often called... Gorp is called trail mix. I didn't know this. I just learned something now. Gorp, often called trail mix, is a snack food commonly used in outdoor recreational activities such as hiking, backpacking, mountaineering, and camping. This food mixture is termed scroggin in the United Kingdom. What is with you guys? Scroggin, that's a perfectly good, like, obscenity, you know? And you're using it for trail mix. It's not an obscenity. No, I'm not saying an obscenity, but I'm saying, doesn't it sound like an obscenity? Scroggin. Yeah, I couldn't meet you. I was busy scroggin. I don't even know what it means, or what it could mean, but it sounds like it could mean something. Anyway, Gorp usually consists of a mixture of nuts and dried fruits, such as raisins and cranberries. Look at this! Other ingredients such as M&Ms, chocolate or yogurt chips may be included. Is there nothing Wikipedia doesn't know? My goodness. My goodness. Well, okay, how about that? I learned something. And why is it called trail mix exactly? Because are you supposed to take it on the trail with you? Okay, I guess that makes somewhat of a bit of sense. All right. Well, with that, we're out of time. You know, we're in the middle of our fundraiser here at WUSB. We would have asked for money tonight, except there's nobody here to take pledges. But you can pledge online by going to WUSB.fm and follow the links for pledging online. And please be generous, because having this radio station here is more important than many people know. Did I say that right? I think I did. Yeah, it's important. It's damn important. It's really, really important. So please support the radio station, WUSB. Keep us here. Someone actually left a book, Top 10 Reasons to Donate to WUSB. And we only have time for, let's say, three of them. We'll read more next week. WUSB broadcasts a diverse and eclectic program schedule, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Number two, WUSB is staffed by volunteers. Number three, WUSB receives no federal monies for operation. How do you like that? Till next week, Emmanuel Goldstein. Have a good night. Your mouthpiece for as you spread.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.